Lamonte Show, Wednesday, May 2nd. Rocking and rolling as we're getting you into the Jazz and the Rockets. Recapping an epic meltdown last night by your Toronto Raptors. Is anybody, well, Drake, I was going to say, is anybody really a fan of the Raptors?
Drake is. He's the only one, though.
I would agree with that. We'll talk a lot about that series. Got to talk about the panic button in Chicago for the Cubs.
Is that your panic button or like everybody else's panic button?
Oh, it's my panic button. I don't know about everybody else.
I think it's coming for everybody else.
But you, Darvish, not. I don't mean that you're Darvish or that your name. Anyway, the Cubs have a pitcher. His name is you. Mm-hmm. Not like you as in Jacob. Like you. Anyway, you, Darvish, the pitcher for the Cubs, is not good. He's 0-3 with a 6 ERA. It's time to panic.
Lit.
Little Champions League today. Donald Trump's a liar 6.5 times a day. We got a lot to get to, but let's get you ready for Jazz and Rockets tonight. Jake, if I said to you, give me one real important key to this game, what stands out to you if the Jazz are going to win this game?
I think it is knocking down the three ball and getting that wide open look in the corner that they were able to get so consistently in the OKC series. I felt like in game one, the Jazz never really got into that game. It felt like they were chasing it the entire game, whether that was, you know, getting back on defense, yeah, whether that was, you know, trying not to turn the ball over so much. I just felt like they never got into their flow. And I think if I had to pick a second key, it would be involving Rudy Gobert offensively. He has got to get going for them if they're to have any chance in this series. And I won't be surprised tonight if they lose, because you are in Houston. It is Harden. It is Chris Paul. But when you go back to Salt Lake, you got to win both games. It really is that simple.
I think my key is getting Rudy Gobert involved in the offense. It really is that simple. They've got to find a way to get pick and roll out of Rudy. I don't know how you do that without compromising other parts of the offense. But if you don't have offense from Rudy Gobert, I think you are going to really struggle, A, to get back in transition, and B, to run any kind of pick and roll. And if Rudy Gobert is not scoring for you offensively, I think Jay Crowder has to have a 35-point game,
yeah,
if they have any chance to win. Well, I actually disagree with that. I think Jay Crowder can be that guy because of how well he shoots the three, but I don't think you want him to be that guy. You know, without Ricky Rubio, you have to find a way to trigger the offense. And without Rudy, I don't know how that happens, because if you're asking Donovan Mitchell or Joe Ingles or, you know, even a guy, you know, an Alec Burks or, you know, pick the guy you want.
Yeah.
They need help. They don't have a guy who knows how to get into the paint with the mind of kicking the ball out. That's the problem. Yeah. If I want Alec Burks to attack the rim, great, let's do it. If I want Mitchell to get inside and throw the layup, okay, great, let's do it. I need a guard on this team for the Jazz to drive into the paint and kick that ball to a three-point shooter. And that, to me, is what's really lacking. That threat is no longer there for the Jazz.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, in addition to everything you just said, another small aspect of Rubio's game that they don't have is that probing that he does sometimes, where, you know, at the beginning of the game, we'll see them get the drive and kick going. But what that inevitably leads to is, you know, when he drives and they end up going to the corner, the defense, that is, and he doesn't kick it, he just kind of probes around the elbow, and then they get movement offensively, and they're not getting that right now. And I think, you know, as much as Rubio's loss was felt in the OKC series, it's really been felt in game one.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be really curious to see what adjustments Quinn Snyder makes, because they really need to make several.
I don't know that there's a lot of adjustments for Quinn to make. And I think all of them, not to be redundant, but I think all of them are around figuring out how to be effective in the high pick and roll, because I think that's where they're really lethal. They're really dangerous. If you can get a guy like Joe Ingles going, if you can get Jingles to hit some threes, he has an odd ability to drive energy, almost unlike any other, you know, mellow, cool cat that I've ever seen. He can drive energy all on his own.
Yeah.
And if you can create more space in the paint, that only makes Donovan Mitchell better. And I think those are real critical things that the Jazz have to have all those things to work.
Yeah, and if we're looking at defense for the Jazz, I don't know how they're going to stop the pick and roll with Harden and Capella. I mean, you have to respect Harden's ability to shoot the three ball, But then when Capella gets that ball in the paint, I don't know what Rudy Gobert is going to do. It's going to take that special night on defense for them to stop him. And we've seen Rudy put up a ton of special plays on defense in the OKC series. He's been there, you know, in moments when you're like, well, I didn't expect him to get to that ball, and he gets to that ball.
But he also needs help from Derek Favors.
Yeah.
Derek's got to hit the jump shot. I think that's another real critical part of this game tonight, is that D Faves has to hit that jumper, and he has to do it routinely, because that's going to slow things down for Houston in transition. You have to score, and this is going to sound really stupid and simplistic, but you have to score a lot to beat Houston, because when the ball goes through the hoop, and they got to take it out of bounds, and they got to go through that whole process,
yeah,
it really slows their ability to get out on the run. When you allow them to outlet the basketball, oh, man.
You're in trouble.
Houston's a much better team when they're throwing the outlet pass and when they're breaking down the floor, and especially when you allow Trevor Ariza to run down to the corner and just spot up. Oh, I mean, you almost have to pick your poison at that point.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think when we're looking at the Rockets' ability to get out and run, I love to compare the Rockets to the Warriors. And what we saw last night with the Warriors is their ability, and really once Steph came in the game, they really picked up the pace, and you saw a noticeable difference in the game. And so tonight, if I'm the Jazz against the Rockets, I agree with you. You've got to slow them down one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I don't know, if you're the Jazz, maybe you try to slow things down on your end. I'm not sure what their strategy is going to be, but that you're right. They got to slow Houston down.
Yeah, I think the Jazz will not win tonight. I think this will go back to Salt Lake City, and they will get a win. But I just don't have a good feeling about tonight. It's going to be a much better game tonight because they're well-rested now. I think Quinn's had a lot of time to get into film and strategy, and they've had a lot of time to game plan for this game too.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a much closer game, but nothing that we saw in game one should give you the idea that Houston's going to slow down.
Yeah.
The Jazz will, if the Jazz are going to win this game tonight, they will have to make a significant change. And I just think they don't have that impact player on the bench. That's the other thing that really stood out to me the other night. You don't have a guy that you can trust. Like, Alec Burks is the guy now that has to really step up, because I think one of the things we saw out of the Jazz is that Dante Exum's not capable. He's not ready to, and I don't know how you even say this, because it seems like he's been in the league for 10 years now, which obviously he hasn't. But Dante Exum is not ready to contribute at this level yet. And whether that's how he carries himself, whether that's his confidence, I don't know. But he's just not able to be half of what Ricky Rubio was.
Yeah, I think still to this day, he's still just a little bit outmatched by the very best in the league. I mean, you look at, you know, even not even defensively, but when he's got the ball on the offensive end, whether he's bringing it up or whether he's at the top of the key and he gets it in whatever play they're running, there is a certain hesitation in his game that puts him in awkward positions. I mean, it can be as small of a thing as just not moving the ball as quickly as he needs to, or maybe he makes the wrong choice and turns it over because he's just so young. With that said, I do think he's come a long way. I do think he's developed a hell of a lot since he came into the league. I mean, we saw him when he first came in the league, and it was brutal. I mean, it was bad.
Well, he's physically larger now. And I think part of the if there was a silver lining in the knee and the shoulder injury, I think that silver lining was it allowed him to mature physically. Now his confidence has to come with that, because this series is a huge opportunity for somebody. Alec Burks is playing his last minutes in a Jazz uniform.
Yeah.
Is Dante Exum? I don't know. But if I'm the Jazz, I'm not picking up his option. You know, he's a guy in my mind that's never going to be a regular contributor in the NBA. Dante Exum's just not that player. If he wants to go back overseas, or if Dante Exum wants to go and play in Australia, whatever he wants to do, he'll be a good player.
Yeah.
He's not an NBA caliber talent. He's never shown that ability to be. And I think at some point you have to make the right decision here. But for right now, they need Alec Burks. They need somebody off that bench to give them a Herculean effort. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I mean, even if you compare the Jazz's bench to, you know, not in both conferences, I mean, they don't have a deep bench at all. And it's a real problem for them. And if I'm ownership and I'm the front office of the Jazz, I think that's where I start this offseason. When I'm thinking about acquiring players, because you know the front line for the Jazz can get it done when they've got everybody, you know, Rubio and everybody else together. They've shown that they can beat the best teams in the league, and they do it with defense and then pretty good offense. But once you have one injury, they're not getting past that, and that's a problem. You've got to be able to overcome a guy like Rubio being down 10 days with an injury. Especially when you consider in the playoffs, the NBA plays a physical brand of basketball. This is not daddy ball anymore. This is physical pounding. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that elbow from Kevin Love on DeMar last night. Oh, I don't buy for a second that that was an accident. I think Kevin Love got him intentionally.
And I don't have any problem with it being not being an accident.
Yeah. You know, so I just think all things considered, in the NBA, you have to have somebody come off the bench with a ton of energy and give you good minutes while you spell your starters.
But here's the problem. Their bench guy is Royce O'Neal.
Mm-hmm.
And Royce O'Neal now is no longer a bench guy. He's a starter.
Yeah.
And if I'm Quinn Snyder, if this doesn't work out well, I think in game three, you have to seriously consider starting Alec Burks. I know that is just heresy and craziness, but
you got to find something.
I think you have to do something because you're only getting, you know, really off your bench right now with starting O'Neal. It's Jay Crowder. That's it. Like, Jarebko's not giving you big minutes. You're not getting, you know, any kind of quality out of Dante Exum. I think you need guys off your bench. It's what fuels the NBA, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Royce O'Neal and Jay Crowder are formidable as a sixth and seventh guy. So I don't know what the dynamic looks like. I don't know how you change what you have, because with all due respect to the Jazz in their bench mob, there's just not a lot of quality there.
No, and I think I think when you look at, again, you look at the Raptors, you look at Boston.
Look at the Warriors.
The Warriors. I mean, you know, they all have good second units.
Pick and pop leads to a dunk by Derek Favors to open the game for the Jazz.
Good sign.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I love that play call. And then Clint Capella comes down and almost rips the basket down. Like, see, this is what's going to happen. We watched Golden State last night.
Yeah.
Are they better than this Rockets team? Because right now, I'm not confident they are.
Listen, with Steph on the floor and with that energy he brings, and really, this is where I get passionate about Steph. With the creativity that he brings to the team, I think they are better. With that said, Curry, when they get to the Rockets series, Curry's going to need to start, and he's going to need to play starter minutes, and he's going to need to be effective the entire time. And when you look at the matchups, Curry traditionally has dominated Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And so I'm not worried about his matchup. I'm worried about Harden and Capella in that series and what Draymond Green's going to do about Clint Capella, because I'm not sure that...
Oh, Draymond can handle Clint Capella.
Well, I think
no problem.
He can handle him, but what I'm saying is that one-on-one, sure. But in the pick and roll, that's a different story. Because once Clint Capella gets moving towards the basket, I think that's a lot to ask to stop him.
Yeah, and just watching the early minutes of this Jazz-Rockets game too, it's been a very fast start. And the Rockets are coming out in really high pick and roll. And just Chris Paul is just getting into the lane at will.
Yep.
And that's something that really, really worries you. And the Jazz very clearly want a track meet here. They very clearly want to get up and down the floor, and I don't disagree with that.
You need to get easy buckets, and I see, I can understand where Quinn's coming from on that strategy. I mean, maybe it is better to get out in transition, to try to get a lot of transition points,
yeah.
And maybe in transition you rack up some fouls for the Rockets. I mean, yep. Maybe that's what they're going to try and do.
Boy, Royce O'Neal's got to have a big game tonight. We'll keep you up to date on that game, but I do want to talk about that Raptors game, Jake, because I'm stunned at how that game was going and how that game now ended last night. And I think it has a broader picture about what's going on in the NBA playoffs right now. A, did the Toronto Raptors choke?
Yes.
Wow. You didn't even hesitate.
No, it's not a hesitation. You're at home, opening game. You're in some stretches of that game, you were dominant. In others, you were not. LeBron took over in portions of that game. But again, it's no excuse. You cannot blame officiating for a loss. And so in my opinion, you blew it. You're at home. You must win.
Well, you touched on that elbow that Kevin Love dropped on DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
And Raptor fans wanted Kevin Love ejected for that.
Mm.
And I understand it. I think in a regular situation, that may have been a flagrant. But I also think they missed a huge call. They had a foul. Kevin Love got fouled three times there. And he traveled. Then he delivered the elbow.
Yeah.
So was he fouled or did he travel? You didn't call any of that. Then he delivers the elbow. And I think that's the biggest problem. When we talk about officiating, we always have, it seems, these conversations about how officiating works. It's not a problem that officials call a lot of fouls. I say this in hockey. It's in basketball, and it's certainly in the NFL. It's not the call you make. It's the call you do not make.
Yes.
It's the foul you do not call. Because if you call it the next time down, or you allow that to go all game long and then you call it late, or you call it all game and then you don't call it late,
yeah,
that's what pisses players off.
Yeah.
So you have to call the foul on the Raptors, or you have to call the travel, and then that elbow to the jaw that could have seriously injured DeRozan.
I thought it was a flagrant. I mean, there's no reason.
It was a flagrant.
Listen, there was – it's one thing to, you know, to rip the ball away from guys and really – you know, try to lock the ball down. But to put your elbows up like that is just completely
unnecessary. But that's what you're taught to do. That's basketball rebounding 101. Guys should not, when guys put their elbows up like that, that's a message to everybody around them. Hey, I'm done playing around. And it is a common basketball play.
And I understand that. And I don't even disagree with
it. And I think that's why it wasn't called a foul, by the way.
But with that said, on the Toronto Raptors side of things, there's no way I wouldn't be fighting for the ball, even with his elbows up. And I'm not saying DeMar deserved it, but what I am saying
is... Well, DeMar wasn't doing anything but standing there and just kind of taking little swipes like a kitty cat on a bowl of milk.
Whatever. I mean, he either needs to go for it or he needs to not be in the play, you know.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the problem. But the other issue was that Kevin Love, in the fourth quarter, I think in critical moments of that game, Kevin Love dominated Valanciunas on the boards, was getting inside of him, was getting over the top of him.
Which is fascinating. You know, I don't know how – and maybe this is the greatness of Kevin Love and LeBron James, right? Because if you're Valanciunas and you're not going to come through with a big rebound late in the game when your team needs it, maybe that's why the Cavs are better. Maybe they're not better the whole game, but when it matters, the Cavs are better. And maybe Kevin Love didn't have a great shooting night. Maybe he wasn't, you know, there, but what does that say?
Steph Curry to start game three.
See, there you go. So he's got his legs under him now, and he's going to start.
But anyway, back to the...
You know, if you're Valanciunas and you're not going to come through in key moments for your team... I mean, I don't know what the Raptors are going to do. I mean, he dominated Tristan Thompson. I mean, just worked him. And you had that game, and you blew it. And that's why I say They choked. That game should have never gone to overtime, and it's not the officials' fault. And I've always said that. If you're relying on the officials, whether it's a strike zone in baseball or officiating in the NBA, you are not a winner. You are not in a position to win a game.
Valanciunas last night, 34 minutes, 21 points, 21 rebounds, and they lost.
And that's all fine and dandy. And this is, and I was tweeting with people about this last night. I said, you cannot get out-rebounded at the end of the game like that.
Can't happen.
And expect to win.
But it wasn't even that they got out-rebounded. And this is on the website. Go check it out. The video is there in plain sight, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Valanciunas misses three tips.
Yeah.
Right at, I mean, the ball is essentially on the rim and he's unable to finish it.
He made contact with the ball on the first tip and then he went for the ball and just whiffed.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't get it. And then Van Vliet having two open three pointers. By the way, why is he in the game trying to shoot a game winning three pointer with a really bum shoulder?
I got news. That should have been DeMar DeRozan, and it wasn't. Yeah,
I would say it should have been DeLon Wright.
Either way, it shouldn't have been
somebody other than Van Vliet.
It shouldn't have been Van Vliet. And if you look back on that game, he had this weird shoulder thing happen. And he earlier in the game, like five, six plays before that.
He's been dealing with a shoulder injury for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
And so he fell and tried to catch himself when he fell, and he re-jammed the shoulder.
Yeah.
So he shouldn't have been in the game there. I mean, that's the bottom line here. But I look at Ibaka, gave them almost nothing. It really was Valanciunas, Lowry, and DeRozan. That's it. Here's the issue. Lowry called a terrible timeout late in the game that stopped the clock. That was a huge mistake. DeRozan just disappeared late in the game and really going 0-4 from three, going 10 of 20 from the floor in the playoffs, the second round of the playoffs, is not good enough.
It's just not.
Only shooting, Lowry and DeRozan shot 6 free throws total between the two of them.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
And that's why I'm saying, you know, it's a mindset thing. If you're DeMar DeRozan, and look at his game-winning attempt, right? He's got the ball, and he drives to the baseline on the right side of the paint and tries to hit a Kobe-esque fadeaway. You're never going to get that space at that moment in
because,
the game.
But who did that? LeBron James did that. The only difference is the ball went in the hoop. He hit a fadeaway, fallaway jumper almost identical to DeMar's, and the ball went in the hoop.
Yeah, well, I think DeMar needs to realize he's not the size of LeBron James, and you're not going to physically beat people like that the way LeBron can. And for my money, no, he's not a great three-point shooter, but that guy is a mid-range player, very much like your boy Gordon Hayward. That's why they're so similar. And DeMar needs to realize that. Your game is not taking it to the rack. Your game is mid-range.
Well, and that's what has changed with Jordan, Kobe, and LeBron. And I'm not saying LeBron is in that echelon. I don't think he's Kobe and Jordan as far as like legacy and wins.
But right now, he's the best player, man.
Evolution. Well, he's the best player in the world. I agree with that. But evolution-wise, if you look at how LeBron's game has changed, he used to be a drive and dunk guy. He is now a three-point shooter, a mid-range shooter, a follow-away shooter, a turnaround shooter, a post-up shooter. He's got low-block game. He's got mid-range game, and he's got three-point game. And he is dunking over people like he's never dunked over people before.
Yeah.
And that's what DeMar DeRozan's never going to be. Because, one, he's not physically gifted the way Kobe, Jordan, and LeBron are. He's just not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think until he gets away from whatever it is that is going on in Toronto, and this is what I say about Kevin Durant. This is what I say about a lot of these guys. I think DeMar DeRozan needs a change of scenery because the Lowry thing is not working. Those two guys together have had shot after shot, and it hasn't worked.
Well, they're in the same boat that Russ and KD were in. I'm not comparing them personality-wise to Russ. What I'm saying is situationally, they're in the same boat. They've had chance after chance and haven't gotten the job
done.
And
maybe they're not the right combination to win in Toronto. Now, we could look like a couple of jags for saying this because maybe they knock off Cleveland in this series.
Maybe.
And they go on and they win a championship, which we know is not going to happen, but maybe it does. And then maybe we look like a couple of jag bags and we shouldn't be doing a podcast. I have no idea. That's just not the feeling I get in 25 years of covering this league.
And there's that, and we've watched the Raptors for how long now? In the last couple of years, they just have not shown the ability to close out a game. And that's the most shocking thing.
Absolutely right.
I expect certain teams, like the Orlando Magic or the Brooklyn Nets, or the Lakers. We saw it several times with the Lakers, better yet. To make mistakes down the stretch, both with timeouts and just little silly mistakes like turnovers that cost you the game.
Yeah.
The Raptors are the one seed in the East, an elite team by some measures.
Deep, talented, balanced, inside, outside. There's no excuse other than they are mentally soft.
Yeah.
How do you explain Valanciunas missing that?
I don't know.
How do you explain DeMar DeRozan? How do you explain Anthony Davis last night? Let's get into the Warriors and the Pelicans here on the Monty Show. Stunning last night. How many free throws did Anthony Davis have? How about zero? He did not try. He did not attempt a free throw last night.
Well, I mean, what does that say to you?
Draymond Green frickin' dominated him.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not a Draymond guy. Again, wrote this on the website today. I'm not a Draymond guy, never have been, probably never will be. Go punch a guy in a bar in college, okay, see you later, man.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm just not a Draymond Green guy.
Yeah.
But when he is at his best, when he's playing his game, the Warriors are unstoppable. Because you talked about Warriors-Rockets, which we both think is going to happen.
Yeah.
Clint Capella is dominating, by the way, against the Jazz. We talked about this idea that the Rockets and the Warriors are going to go head-to-head. They're starting Draymond Green at center, and he is handling Anthony Davis. Now, that's not to say that Anthony Davis didn't have a double-double. That's not to say that AD didn't have 15 boards and 25 points, but he shot 50%, and he's been shooting 56% in the postseason, and Draymond Green did not foul him. Anthony Davis, again, not to be redundant, did not shoot a free throw last night. And I don't know how that's possible. He's the best center in basketball, and he doesn't – he plays 43 minutes and does not get fouled. That's why you lost.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think when you look at ways to beat the Warriors, it is getting them in foul trouble. That is one of the best ways to beat them. And Draymond, again, we share this opinion. I'm not a Draymond guy, but I'm a little more positive on him than you are. I think when in the playoffs, he has shown to be an elite defender in many different situations, more down low, but he can guard a three, even a two in some situations. And I think that's why
I think he can guard. So he can guard 2 to 5.
Yeah.
He's not a guy that's guarded point guards, but on switches, that's why the Warriors are so difficult defensively. We've talked a lot of pick and roll today. You have a hell of a time trying to beat them in the pick and roll because of Draymond Green, because of Kevin Durant. And nobody talks about how good Durant is defensively. Klay Thompson, I think, is one of the better defenders in the entire league.
Yeah, he's one of the best in the league, for sure.
I mean, they have the ability to lock you down however you want to play. If you want to run, if you want to half court them, you want to pick and roll them, you want to ISO, they can play with you no matter how you want to play. If you've got a 7-footer or a 6'5 guy.
Yeah.
That's why Rockets, Warriors does not worry me as much as some, because I think Draymond can handle Clint Capella. I think that's not a tough matchup for him.
Yeah,
not to take anything away from Clint, but
I think that the matchups in that series would be fascinating. But I think right now, if you're Anthony Davis, you're going to have to be a superhuman at home.
He's going to have 40-20 games.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that's what it's going to have to be. And before this series started, you were telling me how good the Jrue Holidays of the world are in Etuan Moore. And Etuan Moore had a good night last night, and they still lost.
That's the worst part.
And I think it's because even with Steph Curry coming off the bench, he gave them great minutes.
But we saw this in the Cavs-Pacers series. The Pacers were the better team.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
They just didn't win the games.
Yeah.
And it's because LeBron showed out, and it's because they got little performances. How many big three-pointers did Kevin Love hit? Or you just look at J.R. Smith last night in the Toronto game. Hits this three out of the corner that just lit that team on fire.
Yeah.
You know, and it was all wet, nothing but net, snapped it. Like it,
perfect.
You look at those moments, and then I look at guys like Etuan Moore. He's got to step up. They've got to get more from Mirotić. Mirotić gave him 18 and 9 last night. It wasn't nearly enough. It didn't feel like he had any impact.
But who's he playing against?
Kevin Durant. He's playing against Kevin Durant.
For most of the night, unless there's a switch. And so I just think, you know, when you look at who's going to get it done, we had this direct conversation about the Jazz 5 minutes ago. It applies to the Pelicans against the Warriors. Who's going to score for that team besides Anthony Davis? Anthony Davis can give you 50, and you still won't win.
Yeah. That's a huge problem, dude.
Well, and it just goes to show you this all boils down to and goes back to why Kevin Durant decided to go to the Warriors. Because this dynamic they have, the flexibility they have defensively, the ability to get up and down, the ability to play great half-court offense. I mean, it is really tough to beat them.
Well, and I'll give you credit. You're the resident Golden State Warrior fan. You nailed game one. I mean, if that's how we're going to play game two, well, that's exactly what happened in game two. So now what? Yeah. I mean, like, what happens now? Like, why would we expect a shift going back to New Orleans? Like,
if Golden State, let's say Golden State wins this series in five, what does that do for them going into the Rockets series? Are they back to being that team they haven't been all year? That dynasty caliber?
If they sweep? Dude.
Are they that dynasty caliber team again? I mean, they lost Steph for a long time, and we were both really concerned about the idea that, you know, KD is not LeBron. KD is not the guy who wants to be, you know, the killer in the game.
Correct.
And they really struggled with that dynamically with their offense. But now Steph comes back, and all of a sudden, it's a well-oiled machine again.
Oh, Jay Crowder with the step-back crossover, drops a three. You know, and here, not to keep talking about this Jazz game, but Alec Burks is in the game doing what they need him to do. Set a little screen, gave Jay Crowder a little space, and he dropped it. Love that. Love that. Jazz are up 6. We'll see if that continues. Yeah, I think that they would be back to that dynasty team. And it's because, one, Steph Curry's not coming off the bench. He's going to start game 3, as we said before. But if he's going for 30,
An easy 32.
And you're getting 28 from KD? I mean, that
Thompson
right there.
Gives you 20.
Well, Thompson only gave you, what, 10 points last night or something like that, but he doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about the Golden State Warriors. None of these guys have to be the number one. We were listening to Colin Cowherd today.
Yeah.
Something we don't listen to the herd very much. We have XM satellite radio in the car. And we generally listen to Howard Stern, or we listen to like NBA radio or MLB radio. But there's
a high burnout factor on those shows, let's be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of yelling.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of that. But we were listening to the herd today, and Colin made an interesting point that Russell Westbrook will never be Steph Curry. And it's not because of talent. It's because he's just not a likable guy, Russell Westbrook.
And I don't know how you fix that if you're Russ. I don't know what the change is. This is not a thing where you're struggling to play the pick and roll effectively.
He's just one of those guys that is an odd duck. He's one of those guys who doesn't fit in a whole lot. He's not real popular.
Yeah.
He strikes me as a guy who prefers to sit home, feed up with a glass of whatever his favorite beverage is, and he just likes to be by himself. And he likes to look at his fashion. He likes to look at his shoes, which is cool. But the unquestionable fact is, Russell Westbrook's a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a guy that you... He's not a free agent, and I wrote this today, and I almost felt bad writing it. Russell Westbrook's not a guy where you're like, yeah, I need to go play with him, and I want to win a championship, so I need to go get on Russ's team.
Yeah, he's not that guy.
Because James Harden's not there anymore. Kevin Durant's not there anymore. Paul George isn't going to be there anymore. Although, do you believe the rumors that Paul George is close... he's told the Thunder that he wants to resign, and
well,
there was a bunch of that today.
Listen, I think Paul George likes OKC because, again, where did he come from? He came from the Pacers,
yeah.
A smaller market team where it's not like, oh, it's New York, huge media.
Yeah, but
this
is a guy that grew up in Los Angeles, though,
yeah,
Paul George.
But listen, I think something to me says he likes the smaller market feel. He likes the... I don't know what it is about it that he likes so much.
It's so funny. We look at this completely different. I think Paul George wants to be the guy in the market. I think that's why he will wind up in Philly.
But why did you go to OKC then? Like,
because he wanted to win. He wanted to take that step up. And, you know, the worst part is I think the Pacers were better without him. And I'm not even sure how you explain that because Oladipo just went bananas on that roster. So I don't even know how you explain that. But Oladipo goes from OKC to Indianapolis, and he just blows up. Ooh.
That's rough.
Jacob DeGrom leaves the Mets game tonight injured.
Elbow.
That's not good at all. That's a real...
Dude, what's going on this year in the big leagues?
Yeah, we'll get to it. But real quick on this.
Yeah.
I think Paul George wants to be the man in a Laker uniform. He is from Los Angeles. This is what I say about Kawhi. Kawhi went to college in San Diego, but where did he grow up? He grew up in Riverside.
Yeah.
He's an LA guy.
Yeah.
And my feeling is that they will have a chance at LeBron, Paul George, and Kawhi. I'm not sure how they're going to do it because it's going to cost them Julius Randle. And if I'm the Spurs and I can get Julius Randle and Lonzo Ball, I would do that. If I can get a draft pick, Julius Randle, Lonzo Ball, or two draft picks and two players, I would do that.
Yeah.
If I'm the Lakers, the only guy I'm not giving up is Kyle Kuzma. Other than that, you want to talk about Brandon Ingram? Okay, Brandon's probably going to be a really good player. But if you want to give me Kawhi for Brandon and Lonzo Ball, sure, we can talk about that. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Because they have the cap space to do that. And they, in my opinion, know that Paul George wants to be the man in a Laker uniform. And LeBron James is the perfect guy to play with because he doesn't want to score. He'd rather pass. He's fine giving the ball away. But you need a bucket at the end of the game, LeBron James is fine taking that shot.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Russell Westbrook wants to be the man. He's not going to pass the ball when the game's on the line.
He needs the ball.
He's not going to pass the ball when the game's not on the line. Oh, I'm four assists short of a triple-double? Okay, let's get awkward now and I'll pass the ball. And it leads to a lot of turnovers.
Yeah.
It leads to a lot of awkwardness, a lot of awkward shots for his teammates. Russ is just not a guy you want to play with. Find us online, themontyshow.com. M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com is where you find us online. Elbow injuries abound in Major League Baseball. This is a ball buster for the New York Mets because Jacob DeGrom had been pitching really, really well. He leaves tonight with an elbow injury. I don't know how you replace him because DeGrom finally cut that damn hair and he's been pitching really well. This is not good news for them because the Mets are legitimately a good baseball team.
And they've never been able to keep all five of their young pitchers out there the entire year for 30 starts.
Yeah, this is a real shame. This is a real, real shame. This changes the East. This is, frankly, this is what the Washington Nationals needed.
Yeah.
This could be the shakeup that the Nationals needed. And you know, who's the pitcher you talked about yesterday? Kansas City Royal former AAA guy. What's his, Clay Buchholz?
Oh, Buchholz, yeah. Yeah.
This is another place where Clay Buchholz could be a fit.
Yeah, and again, like I said yesterday, and I'll say it again today, what do you have to lose by giving him a shot?
Ooh, breaking news. The Phoenix Suns are hiring Jazz assistant Igor Kokoskov as their new head coach. A native of Serbia, first European-born head coach in the NBA. This is a huge mistake.
Dude, why can't you just hire a proven NBA coach?
A proven teacher? A proven teacher of the game of... Anyway.
Yeah.
It's the Suns, man.
Yeah.
There are certain teams that are very Cleveland Browns.
They're dumb.
They're just not smart basketball people. And now, this could be the J.J. Watt tweet, where the day he was drafted and everybody was like, this is the worst pick in the history of the NFL. Okay, Igor Kokoskov could be the greatest coach in the history of Greg Popovich. Like, he could turn out to be that good. Okay. What are the chances of that?
Low.
Not good. When you have guys like Devin Booker, how's Devin Booker going to look when he's, Kokoskov.
Thanks.
Okay. He voted for Putin, I'm guessing. But hey, it's fine.
Dude, Booker's not going to be a career son, and I don't buy that garbage.
I don't buy that either. I really don't. And I look at what that team is. They're young. They need a teacher. They need a teacher, and you know what they need? They need a guy who's got balls the size of, like, cantaloupes.
Yeah.
So that there's no questioning who they are. It would be great to have a Jeff Van Gundy go in there. It would be great to have somebody who understands the game and understands what those young guys need. This is a mistake. This is a mistake for the Suns. Sorry.
Well, it's why they'll be bad for a long time.
Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah.
Leaves the game tonight for the Mets with an elbow injury. And you just feel terrible for the Mets. Because I don't know that they're going to... I don't think that they're the team that goes out and spends a ton of money to replace DeGrom.
Yeah, and this is where Harvey comes back to get you. Because, you know, Jason Vargas just came back from his little injury.
But that's the next guy I was going to, though. Matt Harvey.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I just think Matt Harvey is a guy who parties too much. And is not putting his career number one priority.
He's got one foot out the door in New York. Yeah. He doesn't want to be a Met anymore.
You know, and I don't know that. I mean, like, would you sign him to your team?
I would. Because I think Matt Harvey...
Would you replace Yu Darvish with Matt Harvey?
No, hell no. No, because Matt Harvey's never shown to be an ace. Darvish at least has shown to be a Cy Young caliber pitcher, even though he sucks!
Early in Harvey's career, he was definitely an ace. He's fallen
far. Freaking Yu Darvish today. Anyway, I thought they were playing a game, the Cubs, today. Because all I saw was Rocky's batting practice. Okay, I'll stop. Anyway, the point is...
I heard the report that a fan was injured by an Arenado home run today to center field.
There was a UFO that hit a fan in the face. That was Nolan Arenado's home run.
Launch angle.
And that's exactly what it was, man. It's one of those things where I think Matt Harvey needs a change. And I also think, by the way... that this gives Matt Harvey a chance to contribute. And I think it is I think this is a big moment in time for Matt Harvey. DeGrom leaves the game after four shutout innings, went to the clubhouse tunnel, and has not come back up since. He departed tonight's game with a hyperextended right elbow. Good Lord.
We'll see ya.
Oh, you don't like to hear that.
That's not good. It's not good. That means his elbow, and this is not an exaggeration. To me, that says your elbow is legitimately falling apart. I mean, if you hyperextend your elbow as a pitcher, you're in deep trouble.
Well, you know about elbow problems your boy Johnny Cueto is going to see James Andrews, which means he's going to have Tommy John surgery. Yeah. They haven't said that yet, but it's fascinating to me to see how these things change throughout the season. Okay, so right now, Arizona, I think, is arguably the best team in baseball. They lost Taiwan Walker, which I think was a net gain. Because I just don't think he's been what they needed him to be. I think they lost that trade. We've talked about this. I think that acquisition was a mistake, but they're a pitching organization. Okay, I get it. They have guys coming up through the pipeline. Shelby Miller had TJ last year. He's going to be fine. He'll get a shot at some point this year. My guess is this will be sometime in the middle of the season, right? Okay, great. The Mets don't have that luxury because they're in an underachieving division. And when you are the New York Mets, and I'm not going to say that you overperformed, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that this is a bit of a surprise. That
their first month of the season, them being that good. Yeah,
I mean, it's a bit of a surprise.
Nobody saw that coming, I don't think. I mean, everybody thought they were talented, but I don't think, I mean, whatever their record is.
17-10, half game up on the 17-11 Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, I mean, the same goes for the Braves. I mean, look, I think it's the Nationals division to lose overall in the long run. But at the same time, I think it is, man. I think, again,
it's not early anymore.
Well, I'm not saying it's not early. What I'm saying is now teams got to figure it out. You got to start putting it together now. You know, and this goes for the Cubs. This goes for the Giants. This goes for the Nats. You know, these teams have got to put it together now. You know, the whole it's early thing is getting into the groove of the season. At this point now, you got to put it together as a team. You've got to start producing runs. You can't be relying on Bryce Harper to hit 500-foot bombs every game to win you the game. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you 100%. And I think it's a little bit of tough sledding, to be honest with you, for teams like, you know, who's one of the biggest disappointments in baseball right now? The Dodgers. I think it's incredibly tough sledding for the Dodgers. I think their season,
they're just strapped financially. And
they're not strapped financially, though. And this is another discussion that we've been having lately. The Dodgers are not hurting for money. They don't want to pay the luxury tax this year.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So that's why
they
want to
make a. Why are they strapped for? Okay, I see. They don't have money.
Yeah. They want to put themselves in a better position long term
for Bryce Harper.
Means this year they're strapped, as I said. I'm just saying that this year they're not in a position to go out and sign the Machados and spend big money.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I mean, they could.
I can get down with that.
Look,
they could.
They have the money, but they don't want to strategically long term, and I understand that. But with that said, if that's how you're going to approach the season, I don't want to hear about World Series aspirations.
Yeah, I would agree. By the way, Raul Neto is in the game for the Jets.
Who?
Raul Neto is in the game for the Jazz, and they're up 39-31, by the way. So it's worked out fairly well for them.
Much better performance so far.
But I look at, back to baseball, I look at this Mets situation with DeGrom, they're screwed. Because I don't see them. They're a club. The Wilpons, who own that team, are financially strapped. They're coming out of that. They got hit hard in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme deal. The economic downturn really hurt them.
Yeah.
They're on the way back from that. But I think this is the window. This might be the motivation. If DeGrom's out for any length of time, this could be the turning point in the division. Because the Phillies it's all good that they are, you know, they're getting decent pitching. The Nationals pitching is going to get better. Max Scherzer's, I think, the best player in baseball. And I didn't say pitcher, I said player. There are a few guys this season right here, right now, that I would take over Max Scherzer. By the way, Bryce Harper's one of them. But Max Scherzer is one of the best players in baseball. And he will put that team on his back if that's what it takes. And I think the Nationals, this could be that moment in time where they're like, yeah, when we heard about the DeGrom thing, we jumped on it and went and got X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
I could easily see that happening. The problem with the Cubs today is Yu Darvish got rocked again. And it's not early anymore for Yu Darvish. He said, you know, I'm a slow starter, the cold weather, the...
What is he? What has he got, 5 starts now?
Yeah, and he's 0-3 like with a 6 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we doing? And yeah, Yu Darvish has pitched well at times. Yu Darvish has pitched well. But Yu Darvish is not somebody that you can wait on if you're the Cubs. You signed this guy to a massive contract to win now.
Yeah.
And you are sputtering in a division, by the way, that's a heck of a lot better than people thought. The St. Louis Cardinals and Milwaukee Brewers are now tied at the top of that division. The Cubs are a half game back. And as much as that shouldn't be a concern for Cub fans, you're damn right it's a concern.
I don't know. I kind of disagree that it's a concern as far as the standings go. I'm not looking at the standings.
When does it become a concern?
Well, I think it becomes a concern, you know, when you get to the All-Star break and you're still, like, chilling a half game back. That's a problem because now you're going to have to battle the entire second half to build a lead. For me, I'm concerned about Yu Darvish. The idea that you're getting beat by the mainstays of a team is a problem. I mean, if you're getting beat by lower-end guys on a pitch that you left over the plate, okay, I can write that off. You made a mistake. But you can't get beat by the Arenados of the world and the Blackmans and the LeMahieus. That can't happen.
4 1/3, 7 hits, 5 earned, 3 home runs, 3 walks, 8 Ks.
And the walks right there for Yu Darvish are a problem.
Okay, he pitched really well against the Brewers the timeout before that, right? 6 innings, no earned runs. Colorado, 4 2/3, 5 earned. Atlanta, 4 2/3, 4 earned. Milwaukee, 6 innings, 1 earned. Okay. Miami, 5 hits, 4 1/3, 5 hits, 5 earned.
So the fourth inning, the fifth inning is a real problem for him.
He cannot go deep in games, and he's throwing a ton of pitches. 102, 94, 105, 94, 104, 86 today. 86 and 4 1/3.
Yeah, and I
which
think
means you got one out in the fifth, by the way.
Yeah, and for me, what that says to me, based on number of pitches and where he's getting knocked out of the game, to me, that says he just doesn't have the command. He doesn't have the command of his fastball, and hitters are not respecting his fastball. He's got, you know, he's capable of throwing 96 and touching 97 at times. That's not where he lives, though. He lives at 94 to 95, and his fastball is straight as an arrow.
I'm telling you, if you are not concerned about Yu Darvish, you're not paying attention.
Oh, I'm concerned
and
about
him. If you're not concerned for the Chicago Cubs, you're not paying attention. Because this is a team that is still relying on Ben Zobrist as an outfielder. This is a team that still is struggling to find Anthony Rizzo a base hit. Anthony Rizzo has become a guy now that's bust or bang. Like, the guy is either going yard or he's not. I look up and down this lineup, and Javier Baez goes from 320 to 279 in like 2 days and still strikes out 4-1 to walk. Like, that's alarming.
Well, listen, the Javi Baez hitting issue has been well documented for many seasons, and I don't know that the guy's ever going to change his approach of swing for the fences every single time. That's not going to get it done in the big leagues.
But how many 300 hitters do they have in their regular 8 position players?
Well, right now, today, not many. But
zero.
I get it.
Schwarber's hitting 272.
Right, but he's not a 300 hitter either way.
That guy's a
280 power guy. That's his job in life.
Well, that's all well and good, but what does it mean that he's got 7 home runs and 17 RBIs? The guys around him are not hitting. Javi Baez has 7 home runs and 26 RBIs. Like, I mean, you are relying on Javier Baez right now as your best offensive player. That's what he's been.
So what does that tell you, though?
They're screwed, is what that tells you.
They're struggling. They're not screwed. They're struggling.
Right, but again, see, you look at it in a wide view. What this tells you is they never left 2017 behind them, because this is the exact same lineup and the exact same players and the exact same results. The good news is Kyle Schwarber is a little bit better of a contact hitter this year. The good news is apparently Javi Baez has figured a little here and there out, but now he's swinging at sliders low and away a foot outside again.
Mm-hmm.
So how much did it really take hold?
Yeah.
My point is this team's not markedly better in the lineup. So if Yu Darvish struggles, they're screwed. If you continue to get mediocre performances out of guys like a Jose Quintana, you're screwed. I look at their rotation and I say to myself, man, Kyle Hendricks got beat up by the Rockies. He's got a 3.19 ERA. This is a guy that's had a 1 ERA, a sub 2 ERA. You're looking at a guy like, you know, Tyler Chatwood, who's got a 2.83 ERA, but he's got 27 strikeouts against 22 walks.
But he's a 5 as well.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm not disagreeing with the walks. I agree with you.
He's got the second best ERA amongst guys that have the 6 starts.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. He's fine. Chatwood's not the problem. He should be your biggest concern. If he's your biggest concern, you're in really good shape.
Quintana's 5.74 is my biggest concern.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're
want to keep spinning the sunshine. I'm not that guy.
Well, I get it that you're not that guy, but the idea that you're saying they're screwed because Rizzo and Schwarber and Bryant aren't hitting, you know, like close to 300 or around 300. Look, they're going to come around eventually. It's a matter of time. The guys are too good to hit whatever Rizzo's hitting, 180 or whatever.
But did they come around last year?
You can't tell me he hit 180 the entire year last year.
No, but they never came around. They never, like Kyle Schwarber never came around. And they changed the hitting coach. Chili Davis is the hitting coach now because they never came around. And they still haven't come around. You know, like
so are you saying they suck or what are you saying?
I'm saying that there is a major flaw. And that is that they're great defensively, but they walk too many guys and they strike out way too much.
So what are your expectations then?
My expectations are I'd love to see them win 85 games. I'd love to see that. But I look at the strikeout numbers on this team, and it's alarming how many Ian Happ struck out 36 times. That's a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah, well, look, I think, and we talk about this every time we watch the Cubs, and it's funny you bring up their hitting coach. Their plate discipline and their approach is not good, and it hasn't been good since the start of the year. And you can keep going back to 2017. I get it. It's a trend. It's a pattern. I understand that. But this year, the approach hasn't been great. They're not waiting for the fastball. They're not staying on the fastball. And you made a point about we were watching Almora hit today. He missed a fastball, you know, middle out, you know, that was on the outer half of the plate at 94 or whatever, very hittable pitch, and he missed it. He fouled it off instead of crushing it. And it's that moment that they're not taking advantage of right now. And that's why I say we're different on it because I say to myself, you know what, Anthony Rizzo is going to figure it out. The guy's too good not to figure it out.
He's striking out 4-1 right now.
Right, which is not going to be the whole season.
It's 171.
And I think we can agree on that, right? Or you're saying he's going to strike out 4-1 the whole year?
I don't know, because he missed games, but he didn't miss that many games because he's got just as many at-bats as a lot of the other regulars. He's got 3 home runs and 11 RBIs. He's only got 23 total bases. This strikes as Kyle Schwarber from last year. That's what this feels like. He's going to give you a home run every 12 at-bats, but man, he's going to strike out at least once a game.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I think he's going to figure it out. The guy is too good not to figure it out. I think he needs to go back to choking up on the bat and playing contact baseball.
He chokes up on the bat with 2 strikes. He still does that. I watched today he was doing that. But he's going to play every single day.
Yeah.
And they supposedly have this approach where they hit the ball the other way. I don't see that. Anthony grounds out into the shift a lot, a whole lot. And I don't know how you fix this team because there's not a guy.
You ride it out. That's you either die by it or you live by it.
And you died by it last year. And this is what I'm telling you. This is the same team.
What does
die
by it mean, though?
You didn't. What did you do last year?
You beat the Nationals, the team you said was better than them.
Right, and they completely overhauled their management style in Washington. They put that on Dusty Baker, was it? I don't know. Yes, they made the playoffs. Yes, they beat the Nationals. They didn't win. The bar is not beat the Nationals now. The bar is go to the World Series. That's the bar for the Chicago Cubs now. They're in the prime of their career. You know, Ken Rosenthal at the Atlantic had a great piece today where he talked about the fact that the Cubs traded all of these incredible assets to build the ball club they have now, and they don't miss those guys. I agree they don't miss those guys, but you do miss those guys if the guys you traded away and what you netted in return, Aroldis Chapman for Gleyber Torres. If Gleyber Torres turns into a perennial all-star shortstop and Addison Russell can't hit his am I going to say what's on my mind, but he can't hit the weight of his schvants, then you're going to miss Gleyber Torres.
Right, but see, and we disagree on this too. You made the Chapman trade and you won and it worked out. And now you don't like it because you don't have that talent on your team.
Sure.
And the team is struggling.
I think Aroldis Chapman probably won a World Series for you.
In a sense, yes.
He was a big part of why they won. Yeah. I guess I'm good with that. I hated that trade the minute they did it. I told you that the minute they did it.
You didn't like it.
I hated that trade. And it is what it is. I Quintana's a huge problem. You gave up really good prospects to get Jose Quintana, and frankly, he's just okay. He's Tyler Chatwood, okay. Like, they're the same guy.
Right, but I think I agree with you on that. Quintana's not an ace. He looked like an ace for the White Sox because they don't have anybody.
He's a three,
well, and that's
man.
Right where he is in their rotation, though. He's just not pitching. He's not pulling his weight, and nor are several other guys on their team. But what I'm saying is you're hitting the panic button based on the fact that guys like Rizzo and Bryant and your core performers aren't performing for you right now. Meanwhile, they did, by the way, Anthony Rizzo did go deep today, and he was a contributor in that game, but nobody else hit, so it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, I get it. You like the stats, and I don't blame you for that. And the stats say that they're going to struggle all year because they're not going to hit for a good average. You know, Rizzo is a banger-bust guy, and that's who they are this year. My opinion is Joe Maddon is not going to stand for this for the entire year. It's not who he is. He's proven to not be that guy. And at some point, he's going to make a point with somebody. He will sit somebody down to make a point.
Yeah, I think that guy is probably Ian Happ. I think that
guy
is
Jason. It should be Baez. It should be Javi Baez, and it should be he did it to Jason Hayward today with Zobrist, and that's why Zobrist was playing. And I know you hate Zobrist, but he is a key for them. When somebody gets hurt, he will fill a role.
Yeah, and a question on Periscope about Yu Darvish being the same since Tommy John. Yu Darvish does not have a problem throwing the ball.
No.
What Yu Darvish has is a command issue. Yu Darvish is missing, and it's on the website, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Yu Darvish is missing down the cock to Nolan Arenado, who put a ball onto the batter's eye at Wrigley Field, which is not an easy thing to do.
Is he mentally soft?
Yes.
I agree.
Yes. I think the sign-stealing thing is still in his head. You can see he's still fidgeting with the way he grips
today,
the ball.
And it just so happened. Today, he changed the sign with a runner on second base.
He did, yes.
And you know what they do to change those signs? And I picked it up right away. I saw it right away. What they do is he will step off, he'll grab the bill of his hat, and he'll look at Contreras. And you'll see they changed the signs. It's a totally different setup.
Absolutely.
And I totally agree with you. It's in his head.
One of the questions that was asked on Periscope, and I'm sorry I missed your name, but Yu Darvish or Jake Arrieta? And I think it's Yu Darvish. I love Jake Arrieta.
It should be Yu Darvish. This year, right now, it's Jake Arrieta. But again, you've gotten the best that you can get out of Jake Arrieta.
Jake is 3-1 right now, right? 3-1, 28 innings, 23 hits, 11 earned. 6.35 Ks per nine, and he's got a 1.16 WHIP and a 3.49 ERA. That's really good, but it's Yu Darvish. If you're asking me, Tyler Chatwood or Jake Arrieta, because that's really what it was. Jake Arrieta didn't want to come back and be a fourth starter.
Yeah,
and they valued Quintana, Hendricks, Darvish, and Lester over Jake Arrieta. That's why they couldn't come to a deal. And Jake Arrieta went and got a pile of money out of the Phillies.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. I love that guy.
And he might see playoff baseball yet.
I'd love it more if he was still a Cub. But it wasn't in the cards. They weren't going to spend that money on him, and the numbers said not to. And they offered him a lower-end deal. He just didn't take it.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have Jake on the club.
Look, I think you, Darvish, and I said this repeatedly before, but he should be a dominant regular season guy. You know, and he just hasn't been that yet. And I don't know if it's the change of scenery and the winter effects, because he didn't experience that in Houston. But I don't know. But for the Cubs' sake, man, he better turn it around. And as far as Chatwood goes, the guy just needs to throw more fastballs and command the fastball. If he does that, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. NL West, real quick, because, by the way, this is an hour now.
Oh, whoops.
This show goes by so fast every day. NL West, real quick, because I think what we're seeing is that the Diamondbacks are not going anywhere. Like, and I think a lot of us are surprised at their record. They're not going to win 20 games a month.
No.
A.J. Pollock's not going to hit the way A.J. Pollock has hit. I think Paul Goldschmidt's going to step up. He's not going to hit the way, because he's struggled, frankly. He's not been the same guy. But they're going to get out of the division a little bit after this L.A. series. I mean, what are you buying and selling with the Diamondbacks, to go cliche? But, I mean, how much of what you've seen from them do you buy into?
I buy into the pitching performance they're getting, because to me, what I've always said, I've never bought Patrick Corbin just on face value. Never bought him, never believed in him. But what I have said is that the adjustments he needs to make to be a dominant pitcher are not huge adjustments. And it appears as though he's made those adjustments and is able to consistently pitch well now. And I think that's a big deal for this team, because last year it was like every fifth day you knew, well, Corbin's pitching today, so looks like we're going to have to put a 5 or 6.
Are we going to send him to the bullpen? Is he going to stay in the rotation?
And that question was, here the entire year.
Every single time.
We were talking about it.
Ketel Marte's hitting .218. On base, .259.
Ugh.
A.J. Pollock is hitting .292 with a .356. His OPS is unbelievable at 1.045.
Yeah, it's elite. For sure, it's crazy.
Paul Goldschmidt, .262 with a .485 slugging percentage. That's going to come up. David Peralta, .299 with 5 home runs, 17 RBIs. By the way, Pollock, 10 and 25.
Mm.
Those are the numbers that you're like, well,
maybe.
He is
a bit injury prone. I'm not saying I hope he gets hurt, but what I am saying is don't be surprised if he gets hurt. He's proven to be that kind of guy. Look, I mean, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you're sitting pretty right now.
Yeah.
Let's be clear, though. We just entered May. You got a long way to go.
Indeed.
And by the way, a lot of teams in the first half struggle, like the Cubs last year struggled in the first half, put it together in the second half. Not saying that you want to be that team. But let's calm down with the idea that the Diamondbacks are some World Series caliber team and that they're going to dominate the NL all year. I don't think that's the case. I do think, though, the fall off is not going to be like they're going to be terrible. They're a solid team.
They're getting performances, though, out of guys like Descalzo, Jared Dyson, Nick Ahmed has come through with some big hits, home runs. Those are the guys that worry you. Like Pollock, Goldschmidt, Peralta, those are 300 hitters. Right, those are guys that you're going to count on. If AJ stays healthy, he's played 29 games and he's got already 106 at bats. That's a lot of at bats.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll see how long they can stay healthy. The bigger question is, you know, buying and selling their pitching in Arizona, and in you know what you can expect from them. This is the thing. I think this is where they're the great unknown. Patrick Corbin, Zach Godley, and Zach Greinke, these are the guys that are going to have to toe the line. Robbie Ray's out now. Tyvon Walker's out now. You know that you're probably going to run Matt Koch for a while here. How long can you count on Patrick Corbin to be a sub one whip and a 2.25?
Well, listen, I mean, you look at around the league and you look at the teams who've won the World Series in the last couple years, and every one of those teams has had a guy that's had a breakout year. And this could be Corbin's year. I mean, he's consistently shown that he can pound that slider down and he can get in on right-hand hitters.
Yes, he has.
And if he can consistently do that, he's going to dominate. And as much as it pains me to say, that is a huge improvement for the Diamondbacks. That changes their dynamic. And so, you know, if Corbin's dominating, if Greinke's giving you 6 1/3, even 7 innings every time he goes out.
Ah, but he's not.
Yeah.
That's the problem. He's 3-2. He's got a 4.5 ERA. Zach Greinke, and a lot of people wonder if this is where the slip is. He's giving you six innings every time he goes out. But you're getting two earned, five earned, one earned, four earned, five earned, one earned.
Out of fours and fives.
Yeah.
Two and one earned is not a big deal.
No, not at all. But you're also, what you're getting from him is a lot of strikeouts and not very many walks. And that's why Zach Greinke is going to continue to be a core part of that rotation, because he didn't walk guys.
And frankly, that's a little surprising to me that he's striking guys out. I would.
Oh, that slider is.
Oh, it's filthy. It's absolutely filthy. And everyone was complaining about how his velocity's down, and that's a problem. And Greinke wrote that off. He's like, you know what? This is who I am every spring training. You know, this is who I am.
Yep.
And so, hey, if he can be even average, they're okay. They're okay.
Yeah, I think they're going to be there all year long. I really do.
Well, who's going to stop them, frankly?
Well, they're going to get out of the division here a little bit as well, you know. But they've already gone on that road trip where they played extremely well. But now it's these last two with the Dodgers, then three with Houston, two with the Dodgers, then it's Washington, Milwaukee, the Mets, Milwaukee again. So they're going to start playing some teams, you know, and they're going to start playing some teams on the road. Now, they're going to miss Jacob DeGrom probably now, but we'll see. Anyways, we should probably stop the show. It's been hour. This show flies by, man. I don't even know how you explain it. Find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Find us online, themontyshow.com. If you're a podcaster, we appreciate you being here as well. Subscribe to our podcast on SoundCloud, on iTunes, and on Google Play, on Stitcher. Anywhere you get your podcasts, it's The Monty Show. We'll see you tomorrow. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.